The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. And I'm back, too, after several days in the beautiful land of Austria. Just a wonderful trip for me and for my family. I'll have a fair bit more to say about that. Coming up in the second segment, I do want to just thank the substitutes who filled in for me, Brent Nachtigall, on Friday's program, and then Richard Palmer, who was juggling quite a bit over these last few days. Yesterday, in fact, he stepped in right at the last minute. I was going to try to piece together some audio bits for Sam to play yesterday, and as it turns out, we had to check out of the hotel a little bit sooner than we anticipated, so that abruptly ended my recording session. I was about 4 minutes into it, and it'll just be lost forever. But special thanks to Brent and to Richard, especially Richard there, for being Johnny on the spot at the last second yesterday. To reward him, I gave him a large case of roasted Viennese Brussels sprouts straight from Vienna. No, I don't even know if Vienna has those, but in any event, apparently he doesn't like Brussels sprouts, so we'll see if we can convert him over to a Brussels sprouts lover. Well, that was the least that I could do in giving him a reward for all that he did. It literally was the least that I could do. A few updates here on the program over the weekend. 138 responses to Scoffers in the Last Days. That's the one we advertised the Epistles of Peter booklet. I think it was the first time that we've offered that booklet on the air here in the UK. So a little bit of a lower response than what we've had in recent months. But as I think Richard pointed out yesterday, we have another one lined up that we're hoping will pass compliance here in the next day or two. Will Britain be part of a united Europe? Something that's obviously a very hot topic over here in the UK, and we're looking forward to a big response for that, offering the He Was Right booklet. So lots coming up here in the next few days. We've got the UK referendum in just a little more than a week, next Thursday, I believe. So we're down to 7 or 8 days away from this historic referendum. Will Britain be part of it? Will Britain be part of a united Europe? Well, we know the answer to that question, whether or not it's finally answered next Thursday, remains to be seen. I'll have a little bit more to say about that referendum coming up later in this segment. But just getting back to some of our wonderful substitutes who've filled in on this program and others, I thought I'd start the segment by reading from one of you some email feedback that we got from South Africa. This says here, I've been thinking a lot recently about what wonderful qualities God's college helps to grow in the young men and women who attend there, especially with recent graduations from both campuses. This is evident in the quality of programs originating from KPCG. Listening to how the programs are presented by the various hosts just reaffirms that. The great God is reestablishing the great orators in this church, taking leadership, embracing hardness, and running with a message unlike any other in this messy world. He says here, my gratitude is multiplied when I think just what a privilege it is to listen to programs that draw inspiration from the living word of the living God on just about any subject. From dysfunctional celebrities to lessons from the U.S. Constitution to proverbs for scoffers to Britain leaving the EU to Judah and Nehemiah, and the list goes on and on. Every program is a huge success because it's another victory, another broadcast of a critical message into this dying world. Every program, he says, finally carries lessons, hope, and a warning to a people unaware of what is about to take place. Thought that was some excellent feedback, particularly there about the leaders of tomorrow or the great orators of tomorrow being prepared and trained right now in God's church. Of course, we've just come through the Pentecost weekend, one of God's annual festivals. And as Herbert Armstrong said so many times, you can't come to an understanding of why Pentecost by just reading the sections of the Bible that specifically talk about Pentecost. He said you have to understand God's purpose. You have to, as Isaiah 28 brings out, you have to put it all together, here a little and there a little, to really understand why Pentecost. And of course, the reason why is because of the need, the tremendous need for teachers, for this world to be taught, to be educated in the ways of God. There's so much that we in God's church have to give to this world. We've been hearing so much in recent months and on our website, in lectures, on KPCG, about history that the world has forgotten. We had one of our faithful supporters and listeners, Emmanuel Maximoff, took us around to a number of the sites there in Vienna. He was a wonderful tour guide. In fact, we were visiting Schönbrunn Palace yesterday, the Habsburgs' summer palace, and he took us up to the top of a hill as we were overlooking a good bit of the city of Vienna, and he was explaining a number of the sites to us, and we noticed this lady kind of leaning in, and I thought she wanted us to take a picture. I asked her, do you want me to take a photo for you and your husband? And she said, no, I'm just trying to listen into your tour guide. So I told Mr. Maximoff he needs to start charging for his services. Very informative, very educational. He took us around on the first day to the other side of the city and pointed out where tradition says the great patriarch Abraham lived. This, as it's brought out in the Austrian Chronicle, you don't hear much about this at all in the history books of today. But if you go back far enough, and of course, as another one of our listeners pointed out to me over the weekend too, there's a great universal church that really would rather that history be erased anyway. But where else do you get truth? The truth, except in God's true church. The truth about Christianity. The truth about history. History that where Abraham impacted the city of Vienna, the region that became much, much later, of course, Austria. Well, as I say, we had a wonderful host, and it was very, very educational, as well as inspiring and uplifting and fun, all those things. But very educational all along the way. And of course, as we were traveling, like you, it was a little harder to keep up with some of the headlines, of course, being on the move as much as we were. But we, as you no doubt saw on Sunday, another terrorist attack, another radical Islamist attack against that homosexual nightclub in Orlando, Florida. I know Richard has been talking about this on the last couple of programs. But to just step back and look at the bigger picture for a moment, according to thereligionofpeace.com, radical Islamists have murdered 121 people on U.S. soil over the past 10 years. 121 people over the past 10 years. And of course, if you just look at what's happened over the last 7.5 years under President Obama's watch, early on in his presidency, November 2009, you had the Muslim psychiatrist gunning down 13 unarmed soldiers, screaming praises to Allah. Remember that? That was called workplace violence, because the administration wanted to do everything possible to erase the true motive, to not tell the truth about what motivated that Muslim psychiatrist, so-called, in Massachusetts, 2011. Three Jews stabbed to death by Muslim extremists. Of course, the one you probably remember better, the Boston Massacre, as some have called it. Three people murdered, some 260 injured. That was the case where we were warned about these two terrorists by Russia, of all nations. Russia warned the United States in advance. These two guys are terrorists. They're living in your nation. And we ignored those warnings. And because of it, three people were murdered and hundreds injured, some of them losing limbs, legs, arms. A couple years after that, in Chattanooga, another devout, supposedly devout Muslim, staging a suicide attack at that recruiting center. This was just last year. Killed five people. And then, of course, San Bernardino in December, 14 people killed. 22 people were seriously injured. Another mass shooting. An attempted bombing. And now you have Orlando. 49 people gunned down. One witness said it was like he was going for fish or fishing in a barrel full of fish. There was only one exit, evidently, and he was in the front of it. So he went through the place and he killed 49 people, injured 53 others. This is what President Obama had to say about that attack yesterday. This is clip five.
Our diversity and our respect for one another, our drawing on the talents of everybody in this country, our making sure that we are treating everybody fairly. That we're not judging people on the basis of what faith they are, or what race they are, or what ethnicity they are, or what their sexual orientation is. That's what makes this country great. That's a spirit we see in Orlando. That's the unity and resolve that will allow us to defeat ISIL. That's what will preserve our values and our ideals that define us as Americans. That's how we're going to defend this nation, and that's how we're going to defend our way of life.
That's President Obama yesterday talking about the solution to all these attacks. Diversity. We just got to treat everybody fairly and not judge people, and certainly not single out religion as a motivation, nothing like that. It's the diversity that we celebrate. Our diversity is our defense. If you remember those comments we reported on at the Trumpet, General Casey after the Fort Hood massacre, he said our diversity, not only in our army, but in our country, is a strength. And then he said, and as horrific as this tragedy was, speaking of Fort Hood, where 13 people were murdered, General Casey said, as horrific as that tragedy was, if our diversity becomes a casualty, I think that's worse. That's worse than 13 people being gunned down by a radical Islamist. That's a pretty revealing comment. It's an amazing statement to make. And then President Obama follows on that just yesterday. saying many of the same things. All that it boils down to is we've got to treat people fairly and not judge people. But what is the United States of America going to do in the face of all of these attacks, these repeated attacks? 121 people have been gunned down or stabbed to death or blown up on American soil just in the last decade, most of them on President Obama's watch. And you can see why there's so many critics who are saying, look, just at least identify the enemy. At least tell us that we're going to go on the offensive. Thomas Sowell, in his latest, he writes, however great the shock of the massacre in Orlando, it's only a matter of time before we start hearing again the fact-free dogma that diversity is our strength. Well, he wrote that before the president's remarks yesterday, and I think Mr. Sowell pretty well hit the nail on the head. It's only a matter of time, he said, before we hear again of the fact-free dogma that diversity is our strength. He said, if there's any place in the Guinness Book of World Records for the words repeated the most often over the most years without one speck of evidence, diversity should be a prime candidate. Is diversity our strength? Or anybody's strength anywhere in the world? Does Japan's homogenous population cause the Japanese to suffer? Have the Balkans been blessed by their diversity? Or does the very word Balkanization remind us of centuries of strife, bloodshed, and unspeakable atrocities extending into our own times? Has Europe become a safer place after importing vast numbers of people from the Middle East, with cultures hostile to the fundamental values of Western civilization? Is Europe safer? Paris last year in November, 130 people blown up or gunned down, 368 injured, 100 of them seriously injured. That was 7-8 months ago. And then more recent than that, Brussels, at the end of March, just this year, 3 coordinated bombings in Belgium, 2 at the airport, 1 at the metro station, 32 victims murdered, another 300 injured. I mean, just this week, a day following Orlando, you had another ISIS attacker murdering 2 police officers, a commander and his wife, at their home near Paris. These things are happening more frequently. There's a chain of bloody violence, as Ezekiel prophesied, spreading across our land in America and the UK. There's a chain of bloody violence that's really encircling the entire earth. Satan has been cast down, Revelation 12. He's confined to this earth. And we see so much evidence each day of his presence and the presence of his demons. So alas, is Europe safer after importing vast numbers of people from the Middle East? This item here, or this piece, caught my attention for obvious reasons. Given my recent trip, it's from the New Delhi Times. Fear of Islamism in Vienna. It says a poll published in 2015 found that 58% of Austrians felt radicalization of the nation's Muslims was underway. They've got quite a large Muslim population, as just about every big city in Europe does. And 58% of Austrians believe that many of them are being radicalized. And you've heard about some of the Austrian elections recently and just the rising popularity of the right-wing leaders who want to see border security. It says here, this piece on fear of Islamism in Vienna, a string of crimes committed by newly arrived Muslim refugees has enhanced that fear. Earlier this month, as reported by the New York Times, a grandmother of three walking her dog was raped, while a 10-year-old boy was sexually assaulted at a public swimming pool. A 21-year-old student was gang-raped in Vienna's famed Prater Park, and another 50-year-old woman beaten to death on the street. Next door in Germany, the infamous sexual assaults in Cologne on New Year's Eve helped to trigger the rise of the Alternative for Deutschland, the AfD party. Well, then it goes and quotes one of the representatives associated with AfD, saying that, look, they've been coming in for years and they're not melting in. They're holding on to their way of thinking, their habits. The diversity isn't working, in other words. They aren't integrating. And as that article brings out, it's been the same way in Germany, which is why there's, again, such a rise in popularity of groups like the AfD. But again, step back from Orlando and look at the world at large. Terror attacks at an all-time high, the Telegraph reported the other day. This was before Orlando, actually. Last week, the Telegraph. Terrorist attacks are at an all-time high, and there are more refugees now than at any time since the Second World War. So we've got more diversity, which is exactly what General Casey wants, which is exactly what President Obama wants. The question is, as Thomas Sowell asks, does diversity make us safer? Is it really a source of strength? There's not one shred of evidence to suggest that it makes regions safer or that it makes nations stronger. It says here in this Telegraph piece on terror attacks that the world's becoming more violent. It says the worsening conflicts in the Middle East, the lack of a solution to the migrant crisis, and an increase in major terrorist incidents have all contributed to making the planet less peaceful. Less peaceful. It talks about some of the more violent areas or regions on Earth: Syria, Iraq, Nigeria, Afghanistan, Pakistan. It says here later, Europe, which still rates the most peaceful continent, saw its average score deteriorate in this year's report in the wake of Islamic State atrocities in Paris and Brussels, with deaths from terrorism in Europe having more than doubled over the last 5 years. Britain, France, Belgium, and other European countries are heavily involved in external conflict in the Middle East and face a growing threat to peace from international terrorism. The article says deaths from conflict were also at a 25-year high, according to the researchers at Institute for Economics and Peace. And then finally, more than 100,000 people were killed in conflict in 2014, up from nearly 20,000 in 2008. Syria, of course, accounts for much of this. But it's increasing. It's increasing all over the world. Terror attacks are on the rise. They're at an all-time high, this study suggests. And yet, many of America's leaders are out saying that this diversity is what's going to help us in the war against extremism. Notice again what President Obama had to say in his comments yesterday. This is clip two.
For a while now, the main contribution of some of my friends on the other side of the aisle have made in the fight against ISIL is to criticize this administration and me for not using the phrase radical Islam. That's the key, they tell us. We can't beat ISIL unless we call them radical Islamists. What exactly would using this label accomplish? What exactly would it change? Would it make ISIL less committed to trying to kill Americans? Would it bring in more allies? Is there a military strategy that is served by this? The answer is none of the above. Calling a threat by a different name does not make it go away. This is a political distraction.
This is just a political distraction for his critics to say, hey, can we at least identify it as radical Islam? In fact, his administration's entire response to this mass shooting in Orlando and to the other ones that have happened under his watch, the response has been one big political distraction, focusing in on diversity or, of course, gun control. Those are the big political talking points in the liberal echo chamber. President Obama went on to say this, clip 3.
And if we fall into the trap of painting all Muslims with a broad brush and imply that we are at war with an entire religion, then we are doing the terrorist work for them.
So just as in recent attacks or previous attacks, there's the rush to defend the religion of Islam. And of course, if the situation were different, if the murderer was a homophobic Christian or a Republican or a Trump supporter, then, of course, it would be easy for the left to identify motivation, the way they see it anyway. But because he's a Muslim, because the killer is a Muslim, we've got to do everything possible to erase what motivates someone to go into a nightclub or to go into a recruiting center or to go on a military base and to just start gunning people down. And of course, these incidents keep happening in gun-free zones. There are a lot of guns in America, to be sure, and they are going to be used, so many of them. But the problem, of course, with this argument is, to take away guns from the people in the middle part of the country is not going to do anything to solve the problem. The root cause of the hatred here, this is just going to explode in more and more acts of violence all over the earth. One more clip here from President Obama yesterday, clip 4.
We now have proposals from the presumptive Republican nominee for President of the United States to bar all Muslims from emigrating to America. We hear language that singles out immigrants and suggests entire religious communities are complicit in violence. Where does this stop? The Orlando killer, one of the San Bernardino killers, the Fort Hood killer, they were all U.S. citizens.
And so where does this language of Donald Trump stop? You can see Trump really getting under the skin of the Obama administration. But again, I'm sure Mr. Trump could ask, look, where do these violent attacks stop? And furthermore, there are alarm bells going off on all three of the major cases, Fort Hood, San Bernardino, Remember the neighbors that came forward and said, well, it looks suspicious, but you know, we had a hard time saying anything because they were Muslim. And we didn't want to appear as though we were Muslimophobic. And the same thing happened here with the Orlando attack. All kinds of alarm bells, all kinds of warning signs. Atrocities that could have been stopped, but that weren't. Why? For what reason? That one website I mentioned, religionofpeace.com, 121 people murdered in the United States by radical Islamists. And then it's quick to point out that there hasn't been one person murdered by an Islamophobia, or whatever you would call it, someone that is reacting to these attacks and going after Muslims. One final clip here from President Obama yesterday, clip one.
Enough talking about being tough on terrorism. Actually be tough on terrorism and stop making it easy as possible for terrorists to buy assault weapons. Reinstate the assault weapons ban. Make it harder for terrorists to use these weapons to kill us. Otherwise, despite extraordinary efforts across our government, by local law enforcement, by our intelligence agencies, by our military, despite all the sacrifices that folks make, these kinds of events are going to keep on happening. And the weapons are only going to get more powerful.
And the irony here is that the United States right now is making it as easy as possible for terrorist sponsoring nations to build up their arsenals. And these weapons are getting more and more powerful. Look at Iran. Look at how much cash they now have because sanctions have been lifted. Look at the freedom that Iranian leaders have to move in and out of Moscow, to take the example of Soleimani, as we covered last week, to make all of these arms deals. Iran, Russia, China, North Korea. The weapons are just getting more and more powerful. The United States is working actively to make it easier for these nations to obtain more powerful weapons. And then meanwhile, the automatic response to these violent tragedies, whether at home or abroad, is to say we need to disarm America or disarm Americans, even as the rest of the world, as I've noted before, is preparing for war. Con Coughlin had a piece at the Telegraph just today or yesterday. An EU army is not just a stupid idea. It's a grave threat to our national to our own security. This is Con Coughlin writing here in the UK. He says, of all the issues EU officials would like to conceal from the British public ahead of next week's referendum vote, the one that arguably poses the gravest threat to our future security is their proposal to establish a European defense force. Europe knows that this could cause a lot of Brits to vote for the exit, to vote leave next week. And so you have the referendum on June 23rd, and then you have the announcement put off until right after that, June 24th, I think it is. Here are our plans to go forward with this European army. And that poses a grave threat to the UK security. It says here, as part of their increasingly desperate efforts to prevent a Brexit vote, bureaucrats are trying to maintain a discreet silence about their future plans to give Brussels even greater powers. Greater powers. I mean, you watch the Brexit video and it talks about, well, they're outlawing all these high energy domestic appliances, kettles, hair dryers and such. I mean, that's just scratching the surface. A European army. That's what's coming. Says initially Brussels had planned to outline the German-led initiative to form a European defense union prior to the referendum vote. But once it became clear that the announcement might persuade undecided British voters to support the Leave campaign, it was hastily postponed until after the vote. What's going on here? What's happening behind the scenes? What's happening behind closed doors? It says, even though Brussels is well aware of the controversy, the proposal is likely to generate all the controversy that proposal is likely to generate, all the indications are that it still intends to press ahead regardless and irrespective of whether Britain votes to leave or remain. See, whatever happens, Europe's going to go forward. Europe's going to go forward. The union, like you heard yesterday, if you listened to the second half of the program, we played the audio from the video we put together for this coming weekend. Europe's about to go through a radical transformation. And Britain's going to be on the outside. You watch. It'll happen. You heard it here first. From God's work, from God's church. You get the truth. From God's work, true history, Bible prophecy, the sure word of prophecy. And it says here in this article, such a proposition is dangerous, Con Coughlin says, because by establishing its own command structure, the EU is setting itself up as a direct rival to NATO. There are many in Europe, particularly in France, who resent America's dominant role in the transatlantic alliance, even though it is largely due to American firepower that Europe has enjoyed peace and prosperity since the end of the Second World War. See, Europe's enjoyed it since the end of the Second World War. It's enjoyed relative peace and prosperity because of America's massive gun, because of America as the world policeman. And now America says, whether it's President Obama or whether it's Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee, we welcome this. We want to see Europe arm themselves. We want to see Europe purchase more guns. We've had enough of NATO being an American dominant organization, funded by America primarily. And so go ahead, arm yourselves. And meanwhile, we'll do everything we can to disarm. Can't you see where this is leading? Well, one more comment here on the referendum next week. This made headlines, too, on the trip that we were on these last few days. The recent polls that show increasing support for Brexit. Now, again, we don't know absolutely what might happen next week, but if Britain votes to leave, you can sure see a lot of prophecies accelerating. Reuters says Britain's Leave campaign opened up a 7-point lead over Remain ahead of the referendum on membership of the European Union. That's according to a poll from late Monday. It says the result of the June 23rd referendum will have far-reaching consequences for politics, the economy, defense, migration, and diplomacy in Britain and elsewhere. What a statement. What a dramatic impact this is going to have on the economy, on defense, on migration, on diplomacy in Britain, in Europe, and elsewhere. Well, Richard Palmer's been all over this story as well, as he's filled in for me over the last week. And I'll again refer you to the next program to hit here in the UK. Will Britain be part of a united Europe? You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
That's a little snippet from the concert we were able to attend last Thursday night in the famous music hall, Musikverein, there in the heart of Vienna. The group is known as the Artists Quartet, a strings quartet that's based there in Vienna. We were coming in just pretty well exhausted that day because we left for the airport here in the UK, I think at 3 a.m., but as we went through a tiring afternoon with a lunch and just driving through some of the city, we finally perked up as we got ready for that concert that night. And what an uplift. In fact, the whole 5 or 6 days in Austria really was inspiring and educational. It made me think often of what Herbert Armstrong said about true education and how that, among other things, we're educated when we travel. When we travel, I mean, the music we were able to appreciate and just the culture, the people that we met with. I mean, just the various languages. My kids came home, both of my children and also my niece as well, they came home on a high with respect to learning to appreciate music more and also to learn more about language. My daughter and my niece, they want to take Hebrew lessons. I'm not sure why Vienna made them want to take Hebrew lessons. And then my son came back, and he wants to take lessons in Dutch so that he can speak to some of his friends from the Netherlands and communicate better. It made me want to brush up on some of the German that I took in high school, just seeing our very enthusiastic supporters in the German-speaking nation of Austria, but then the music as well. Of course, on this station, you have a program each week, Music for Life. And here we were. I mean, it's important. If you know anything about this work, if you know about God's House in Edmond, Oklahoma, if you know about Ryan Malone's program, Music for Life, you see how important this is to our overall education as well. The Music Virin is regarded as one of the best concert halls in the world. First inaugurated back in 1870. It's famous for its New Year's concert every year, the Vienna Philharmonic, that runs on, I think, on PBS stations there in the States. But another reason we were really inspired to be able to go there is because Mr. Armstrong visited that same performance hall on several occasions, I believe, at least in 1984, his last visit through Austria. In June of 1984, he attended a performance of the Vienna Philharmonic there in the Music Virin. He also went to the State Opera House, the Vienna State Opera House, during that 7-8-day trip to Austria, where he visited with world leaders in Vienna. He also made a trip to Salzburg. He spoke to, I think, 700 or 800 brethren. 700 or 800 brethren coming from southern Germany, coming from Austria, listening to Mr. Armstrong speak about how that we ought to be teachers. We ought to be teachers. And to teach, we've got to know the Bible, as he said. We've got to know our history. I told you a bit about that in the first segment. Mr. Maximoff taking us around and telling us what was taught right up until World War II, taught in the schools about Abraham living in Austria, about the Austrian Chronicle. But like with so much other important history, it just gets erased. The more modern and sophisticated we become, the farther we drift from the truth. Mr. Armstrong wrote in an article back in 1963, he was talking about Abraham and his family, Hagar, Sarah, and that passage in Genesis 25, I think, where God ordered Abraham to send away the concubine, Hagar and her son, and Abraham obeyed. Mr. Armstrong says, this was the time Isaac was weaned. Abraham had, after this, no more relations with Hagar or his other concubine, Susanna, who is mentioned in the ancient Austrian chronicle. See Genesis 25:6, where you will read that Abraham's concubines' sons were sent away. And so it's this history, this truth about Susanna and her son with Abraham, and how it impacted the region of Austria. Perhaps we can spend more time on that subject at a later date. My father got into that history in a recent lecture that he gave in Edmond. Well, the day after that night in the Music Virin, we were able to tour through the Hofburg Palace, which Mr. Armstrong visited also in 1984. He met with some leaders of Austria. I forget who exactly. I can find that out later. But in any event, the Hofburg Palace served as the winter home for the Habsburg dynasty for centuries. And of course, when you're in the midst of so many sections of Vienna, in particular the Hofburg Palace, you are right at the heart of the Holy Roman Empire. It's in that palace where you still, to this day, can view the crown jewels of the Holy Roman Empire. That crown that was made back in the 900s, I believe. That crown, those jewels that inspired Adolf Hitler. You might remember that section in what booklet is that? The Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, I think it is. But there's a subhead in there, one of the articles that my father wrote for that publication on Hitler's religion. You should go and review that. It's pretty amazing history. He talks about how Hitler received inspiration with his visit to Vienna, to the Hofburg Palace, to this Holy Roman Empire region. It says in that section, my father wrote this. Oh, I'm just trying to locate the quote. I've got a fairly lengthy one here, and we're running out of time. In any event, my father says here, it's truly amazing that the world knows so little about the satanic power which was behind Hitler. So much has been written but not understood. The colossal assembly hall planned for this new capital of Germania should be seen as a secular cathedral rather than a civic building. The dome, in my father's quoting from, what was it? Either Tolan's Adolf Hitler or another book. In any event, he just talks about how his visit to Vienna really did change Hitler's thinking. And few people, of course, understand the religion behind Adolf Hitler. We'll have to, again, break this down a little bit further and discuss it at a later time. But as he brings out in that booklet, I mean, the crown jewels, Hitler returned those to Germany during his run as the tyrant that he was. He received motivation from it. Hitler wrote in his book, Mein Kampf, "This was the time of which the greatest change I was ever to experience took place in me. From a feeble cosmopolite, I had turned into a fanatical anti-Semite. This happened in Vienna." Earlier on, my father quotes another book on Hitler. Albert Speer, who knew Hitler best during World War II, was convinced that the Führer's intellectual development stopped with the world as he had known it in Vienna in 1910, early on. Now, one of the things that was perhaps the most chilling when we were at the Hofburg Palace, we went through the museum, saw all the crown jewels, and read about all this history of the Holy Roman Empire when it was dominated by Austria, by the Habsburg dynasty. As I say, one of the more chilling moments was when we then left the museum, went outside into this massive courtyard area in front of a balcony there at the entrance to the Hofburg Palace. And Mr. Maximoff had mentioned how that when Hitler came through and conquered Austria early on, in 1938, I think it was, that he spoke before the Austrian people right there at the center of that palace. And so we got on our phones and looked for pictures or images of Hitler speaking at Hofburg. And sure enough, we were trying to find out where he was positioned. And as Mr. Maximoff brought out, there were so many thousands of people, Austrians, that were out there cheering him on, supporting his mission, his fanatical regime. And to be in that same area, it wasn't even that long ago, 1938, less than a century. Here again, you talk about this history of the Holy Roman Empire, these seven resurrections. Of course, that period in World War II being the sixth. And now we see the seventh and final resurrection about to forming in Europe. So many dramatic changes that'll be happening just in the next few weeks, perhaps, months, years, a few short years. Well, late in the afternoon on Friday, we were also able to get into a Vienna Choir Boys concert, and this is one that of course, brought back a lot of good memories from the concert series back home in Edmond We've had them perform at God's House. I forget when it was, a couple years ago. But even before that, they performed once or twice at the Field House, the John Amos Field House. But they have had a wonderful concert. The first half was just the choir singing, and then the second half there was a small orchestra that joined with them. And we'll conclude today's program by just playing a little bit of a snippet from one of the pieces that they had with that orchestra. For now, that's about all that I have time for today. I've got a lot more here in my notes, but that just gives me more that I can get into perhaps tomorrow or later on this week. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again next time.